Welcome to Soundprint. I'm Lisa Simeone. One of the classic episodes of the TV comedy series Seinfeld is called The Marine Biologist. It revolves around the character George Costanza and his desire to impress a woman he's dating. Instead of revealing his true profession, he tells her he's a marine biologist. One day, they're walking along the beach. They see a small crowd of people up ahead. Turns out a whale has been beached and needs to get back out to sea or it will die. A man cries out, "Help! Is anyone here a marine biologist?" And there ensues one of the most hilarious episodes in the history of television sitcom. Well, who knows? George Costanza might just have given the profession of marine biology a boost. But for those who were already enamored of the subject, there's plenty of exciting work in their field. Take viruses, for instance. Marine viruses are the most abundant forms of life in the oceans. They influence everything about the sea. So when scientists study marine viruses, they're getting a grip on genetic diversity, evolution, life itself. But with billions of the organisms swimming around, how do you figure out which ones are which? Which ones are worth studying? In today's Soundprint, the hunt is on for those marine viruses that will tell us the most about our world. Produced by Judith Kampfner, this is The Bucket.
We have different methods that we use to find a virus or isolate the virus. You've got to try and sort of track it down, and then you've got to sort of lure it in.
In 1999, a young marine biologist who was very interested in ocean viruses was working at a laboratory on the south coast of England.
I thought, well, this is going to be the best chance for a number of years to go out and actually try and find one of these viruses.
His name is Willie Wilson.
I remember very distinctly sitting, I had an office that sort of looked out into the English Channel, and in 1999 there was this huge bloom. You know, you could see it from my office, and the ocean turns into this sort of milky white colour. It looks like somebody's just poured this huge vat of milk into the ocean.
It was one of those massive ocean blooms that can be seen at different times all over the world and easily detected by satellite. Viruses help control any one organism. And here, an algal bloom that was getting too large, too dominant in the ocean, was kept in check. The algae had been destroyed, but the virus was probably still there in the water. Willie wanted to investigate. Today, Willie Wilson is based in Maine, but I met him in the office he had 10 years ago when he made his big discovery. Out of the window in this office, we can see Plymouth Harbour, from where the Mayflower Pilgrims once set sail. In his way, Willie Wilson was also a pioneer. He set off in a ship, not bound for America, but for that milky water 20 nautical miles offshore.
When we went out and right into the middle of this milky bloom, what we discovered was that all the cells were dead, and all that was left was tiny little platelets of chalk on the surface of the algae. When all these fall off, that's what causes the milkiness in the surface of the ocean.
If you kind of thought of a detective story, is it like killing a lot of bodies, but the bodies are gone and just the blood is left?
I guess in a way it's the bodies have gone and the blood is left, which is causing all this sort of coloration of the water. You know, we went out there and one of the things we discovered was right in the middle of the most milky part, there was actually no cells left. All the cells were gone, and then we took some water samples and brought them back and we found they were just absolutely full of these giant viruses.
Willie is working in a comparatively new field. In the 1950s, it was thought that viruses were unlikely to exist in the ocean, and if they did, they were not very active. But by the 1980s, with the help of sophisticated electron microscopes, scientists had come to believe that there were viruses that were unique to the ocean. Willie's professor told him that if he could isolate and identify a new virus, it could bring him fame and fortune. What Dr. Wilson and his team did was fascinatingly low-tech, a simple method of collecting water samples.
You go out in the ship and you tie a bucket to a string and you can put it over the edge of the ship and you pull it up. If you want to get water from different depths, we can tie sort of slightly more complicated buckets to a wire string, send it down to say about 10 meters, and then you can bring it back up, and then you can look at a parcel of water from a specific depth. You know, if you're standing on top of a cliff and this bloom is happening, it looks white. And you know, the actual, you know, when you go in, you take a bucket of water and look at it, it's still looking clear. But then when you start looking at down the microscope, you realise that there's all these different chalk particles in there, and importantly for us was the viruses, and it was absolutely full of these viruses.
Back in the lab, Willie set about replicating the drama that had happened out on the ocean. The algae that had been destroyed was a particular kind called Emiliana huxleyi, or E. hux, or E.H. Willie put fresh, healthy E. hux algae in containers. Then he added the water he'd collected from the milky ocean and waited.
Well, you know, we could grow these in incubators in the laboratory, and you could take some different samples of water from this bloom and just add the water to the healthy cells. And then over the period of a few days, you could see this culture getting sicker and sicker. And when I say sicker, it would go green, and then it would go sort of milky green, and then it would just turn into chalk dust.
So by watching the process of destruction occur in stages, it was possible to catch or hunt down the particular virus which attacks EH algae. And when he found it, Willie called it EHV.
You know, last century, when they used to go out hunting tigers, if you wanted to get a tiger, you would tie a goat to a post, and the tiger would come up and sort of eat the goat, and then you could get the tiger. Well, our goat was our healthy algae that we had in a culture, and the virus was the tiger, and we caught our tiger, and we were so happy once we got this. Because from there, once we got our tiger or got our virus, it allowed us to go on and sort of work out what this virus was. It was clearly really important out in the ocean because it was causing the death of these huge blooms of algae.
The stunning discovery that Willie Wilson has made, what's special about EHV, is that it's a giant virus. It has a huge gene count. If you think of the size of the HIV virus to be equivalent to a tennis ball, then EHV is like a basketball. One of Willie's UK team is Mike Allen.
You think of something like HIV as a tiny little virus with 7 or 8 genes in it, I think. That can be absolutely devastating to a human. We're working on a virus here that's got 473, I think is our final count, 473 genes, and we haven't got a clue what it's doing out there because most of these genes are completely new and novel. So it's like a blank canvas. We know the function of a few of the genes, but the majority of them we don't know.
It will take a long time for Willie and Mike and their fellow marine virologists to decode all the patterns of genes in the EHV virus. They're also discovering that the virus is particularly skillful in the way it attacks and invades its host. Watching it closely has been fascinating, says Mike.
Before we were thinking that viruses were very simple. They get into cells, they make copies of themselves, and then they get out. We're finding that the viruses are actually manipulating their hosts in very subtle but defined ways in order to make themselves and maximise their chances of a successful infection.
I looked at a magnified photo they've taken of the EHV virus at work. A very pretty picture, orange, blue and black with a halo effect, all achieved through staining the genetic material. The virus looks like a spacecraft.
The viruses that infect bacteria, they have these sort of lunar landing module type shape where, you know, they come in to land and they have these appendages that come out that sort of feel around looking for their very specific landing sites. And then the tail of the virus then sort of comes in, it docks on the surface. And then the tail has like an accordion where it sort of suddenly snaps down and shoots in all the DNA into the cell. The DNA is injected into the cell and hijacks the host replication machinery. It gets into the cell and it says to the cell, right, I'm just taking over here, and I'm going to use all your machinery here, and instead of reproducing yourself, I'm going to make lots of viruses instead.
Willie was able to match a virus to its host. The milky water was his clue in his particular virus hunt. He had thrown his buckets over the side of his ship and trapped the viruses that had destroyed the algae. But the ocean isn't usually so penetrable. I leave Plymouth to visit another ocean lab, this time in LA. I'm with Professor Jed Furman at the edge of Santa Monica Pier.
Pull up the bucket again. Make sure everything's secure.
And here too, we're lowering a bucket into the ocean.
The Los Angeles beaches, the water, usually pretty clear, especially once you get away from the sand and the surf.
You're one of the pioneers of this study, aren't you? I mean, this whole scientific area of studying marine viruses.
Yeah, we were very early in on the work on marine viruses. We got into it because we were studying other marine microorganisms, mostly bacteria. We found they were growing pretty fast. We were looking to see what happens to them after they grow up, because even though they're dividing pretty quickly, their abundance stays the same. They're in a balanced state where they're being removed as fast as they're growing. There had to be something that was removing them. And what might that be? And viruses were one of those possibilities.
Jed assured me that there would be many viruses in the clear bucket of water he pulled up. It's only recently that scientists have discovered just how numerous marine viruses are. In fact, if you put these viruses end to end, the line would stretch for 200 million light years. Viruses outnumber all other residents of the ocean by about 15 to 1. Jed's team at the University of Southern California are at the forefront of this research.
We know these are the most abundant living things or biological entities or whatever you want to call them. It's hard to call them organisms. They have so many attributes of life. They have effects that we can see very readily. But we don't know what all those effects are.
As I gazed down into the bucket we'd pulled onto the pier, I thought of all the invisible activity that was going on in that clear water. Ocean viruses are stunning, not just for their sheer numbers, but also for their genetic diversity and the fact that they help regulate the ocean. Willie and Jed both consider viruses to be the good guys.
99.99% of the viruses aren't infecting people. They're infecting microorganisms out there in the water, and they're part of the big picture of everything. It's funny, when I tell people that there's 10 million viruses in a milliliter of seawater, and they go, oh, I'll never go swimming again, I'll say, believe me, if they weren't there, you wouldn't want to go swimming. They help keep it clean. They keep everything recycled. They maintain the ocean in the state that you would like it to be in. The viruses are all part of that.
Viruses infect and kill their hosts by bursting and chomping into the organism. This destruction releases nutrients out into the water to be digested up the food chain.
The thing is, viruses recycle what's out there, and the ocean is layered. And when those nutrients go to the deep waters, they have very few chances to get back up to the surface where there's sunlight, where those nutrients can get used for production. So when we realized that the viruses were keeping things really small, so small they don't sink, we figured out that viruses actually might be helping keeping those nutrients up in the sunlit surface waters.
Are you going to be lowering the bucket again?
No, I think this will be enough.
And how deep is it here?
At the end of the pier, it's probably 10 meters or so. A lot of microbial ecologists focus entirely on extreme places. And they're very interesting, and I think we learn a lot.
Extreme places,
very hot, very cold, very dry, very acidic, very basic, something like that. Those are, in fact, very exciting places to study. But there's also many important things to look at in just a bucket of seawater, which might represent a huge swath of the ocean. I'm pouring the water that I've collected from that bucket off the pier here that we'll then take back to the laboratory and collect what we want out of it and do our measurements.
So what did you say we could hear?
That's a person trying to sound like a sea lion.
But there was a sea lion.
The sea lion is off on that buoy out there. There it is.
Can you see? Where is he?
In his laboratory at the University of Southern California, Jed and his team study the DNA of these marine viruses.
We're looking at the sequence, which is the order of the bases, and we're using that for different purposes. Many of them are simply to tell which kind of viruses we have. And we are looking at certain sequences of viruses to try to get an idea about some families of viruses that might be reasonably abundant, to try to find out which ones are occurring at a certain time and how they might change over time.
While collecting the DNA sequences, Jed sets up a hierarchy about what shares a common ancestry. It's one thing to decipher the DNA structure, another to place it in a system, and quite another to work out what each virus infects.
Unless they're interacting with hosts, they're going to just die off. And that's very difficult to do.
To match.
It's very hard to match.
Because you're taking them out of their environment.
That's right. Most of the hosts you can't grow in culture, and even if you could, often it's not under conditions that you can get the viruses to infect them and to find the viruses.
Unlike Willie, Jed does not have an algal bloom to help him fish for viruses, so he has to take a different approach. He's working with divers. His PhD student, Anand Patel, has devised a specialist tool for virus harvesting. He's layered slivers of local rock, which jut out from a spiked post, in the hope that when planted in the sea, viruses will settle on them.
You guys wait here, I'm just going to go to the surface.
On a little boat off Santa Catalina Island, Jed and I communicate with Anand and his co-diver via a hydrophone while they look for a spot to plant the spikes into the sediment of the seabed.
Can you hear us okay now?
Yeah, we can hear you, but I think we were a little out of range. Oh,
okay.
I moved the hydrophone closer to you and a little deeper.
Yeah, I think that's a lot better. I can hear you a lot better now. Yeah, I can hear you much better.
Okay, that's good.
Okay, the spikes are in. I pushed them into the... sediment. It takes a little bit of work, but it's fairly simple. I mean,
in a month's time, Anand will dive to the same spot and collect the slivers of rock. He'll then extract the DNA from the viruses he finds. Knowing that there's viral activity even in the sediment, it's now important for scientists to get samples from the lower depths.
Many laboratories are trying to get some picture about what's going on down there. It's harder to study than the surface waters. You don't have satellite pictures that show you much down in the deeper water, whereas satellites show you pigments and temperatures and things happening up near the surface. So it's harder work, but it needs to get done, and we're one of the laboratories that's trying to do some of that other work.
And is more equipment being developed to enable that to happen?
Yes, there's a lot of unmanned equipment, which is now being developed more. There's gliders. And
you know the beginning of the film Titanic? There's a remote-operated vehicle that goes down to the depths. Is it something like that?
There's work like that, yes. There's instruments like that that have been used. They were developed for a lot of scientific work. Sometimes they were developed for military applications. But they have a lot of scientific applications.
I'm back with Willie Wilson at the Plymouth Marine Biology Lab in England. He's excited that there's still so much to discover.
And there is so much we don't know about viruses, and that's what really drives my interest in it. I know I can go out into any water and I could take a bucket of viruses. I could isolate 100 new viruses that could start 100 careers. And that's why I find it interesting, and because we just know so little about them.
Isolating the EHV from the EH algal bloom has certainly helped Willie's career. It's especially important because it's such a large virus.
At the time when we were sequencing this virus, actually trying to sort of decode this virus, it soon became clear that it was the biggest virus to be sequenced. And in the world at that time, and that's why we were really keen to try and get this sequence and out as quick as possible, because it was going to be the biggest virus in the world. And one of the key discoveries was, and this is going to seem really uninteresting, we didn't know what most of the genes were. There was about 80% of the whole genome was completely unknown to science. There's still a huge amount to be discovered in this virus.
If you look at what the virus is doing when it invades its host, that has a distinct survival of the fittest dynamic.
When you look at the whole death strategy of this virus, it's very interesting. And what the virus does when it gets inside the cell is it actually tries to keep the cell alive as long as possible. It's this anti-aging strategy. And there's a lot of research at the moment in anti-cancer treatments and trying to control cell death processes. If that could be harnessed somehow for using in, for example, anti-cancer therapies, it could be very useful.
In fact, the study of ocean viruses could have many applications. Willie suggests that they could be useful in the manufacture of many products, from anti-aging creams to more ecological laundry soap.
So you remember, this is one process, one particular virus that we managed to discover. And, you know, if you think about it, there's up to 100 million different viruses in the teaspoon of seawater. If all these have got their own different pathways and compounds, and we haven't even scratched the surface of the biotechnological potential that's out there.
This has implications for evolutionary theory.
Darwin would absolutely love this because it basically is a mechanism that explains all his wonderful theories. You know, one of the key roles of viruses is transferring genes between different organisms. I mean, Darwin talked about natural selection, but he didn't really talk about so much about the mechanisms behind some of the gene transfer processes. He was one of these, in a way, an old-fashioned scientist who used to go out and observe and work, almost a stamp collector. You know, it's funny, in the early days of during my PhD, when we were going out sort of looking for new viruses and trying to work out what was there, we were often called stamp collectors, so it's not such a bad thing. Darwin would be thrilled at the discovery of all these new viruses, new forms of it is new forms of life.
These viruses and the cunning way they survive demonstrate a kind of natural selection at the microbial level, says Willie.
When they infect a cell and they're producing, you know, the clones of themselves, every now and then there's one of the viruses that'll have picked up a new piece of DNA that a lot of the times that piece of DNA and will, you know, it won't do anything. You know, the virus will never be able to infect or have a successful infection. But every now and then, one of these viruses are going to find that it's going to help them propagate. It's going to, you know, for example, if the it contains a pathway of genes that makes it stronger, and then we have the virus will then become successful. And that's the whole purpose of biological diversity. There's a huge amount of diversity out there.
And more recently in France, there's been a discovery of an even bigger virus called the Mimi virus. It's a giant virus with more genes than most bacteria.
I mean, I find it an absolutely amazing discovery. And this Mimi virus has really made us think about the evolution of genes and the different form that these genes can produce. You know, here we have a virus that's three times the size of any other virus that's ever been known. It's almost like finding a dinosaur that's swimming in the ocean that's three times the size of a blue whale. And there is a huge population of them living at the bottom of the ocean. People would take note of that for sure. So why not a virus that's three times the size of any other virus?
Large viruses have gone undiscovered until recently because marine biologists have been using filters that filtered the large viruses out. Who knows what other giant viruses may be out there in the ocean? Willie's now working at the Bigelow Marine Laboratory in Maine. What viruses are doing in the ocean is such a natural process, he says. It's amazing this went unnoticed for so long.
If you think of a forest there where there's just too much biological mass in terms of the trees, and there still has to be some sort of loss process in there, and a brush fire coming through and allowing new growth to happen, and that's where that's where the viruses play this important role, is they allow the new growth to happen. I mean, really, what's happening is the viruses are killing all these different cells that allows the release of organic nutrients, perfect food for all the bacteria in the ocean, and then the bacteria can then churn it up into a form that can be then reused. It's the original recycling, really. I mean, I always like to try and give viruses as good a press as possible. They are helping to regulate what's going on in the ocean in terms of the biology. They are the oil that you put in the engine. If you don't put oil in your engine, that engine is going to seize. If there's no viruses in the ocean, the biology in the ocean would cease to exist.
It's amazing that a simple bucket of ocean water can hold such discoveries, and who knows how many mysteries waiting to be solved.
The Bucket was produced by Judith Kampfner and mixed by Jared Weisbrot. The science editor was Barbara Culleton. This program airs as part of our series World of Viruses, produced with support from SEPA, the Science Education Partnership Award Program at NIH, and the National Center for Research Resources, in collaboration with the Nebraska Center for Virology and the University of Nebraska State Museum. You can listen to this program and all the episodes from the World of Viruses series anytime you want, just by visiting our website, soundprint.org. On the next Soundprint, looking back to the International Geophysical Year of the 1950s, when Antarctic exploration meant guesswork and luck. IGY, On the Ice, next week on Soundprint. CDs of Soundprint episodes are available for a small fee by calling toll-free 1-888-38-TAPES. Soundprint is produced by the Soundprint Media Center in association with WAMU and American University. We love hearing from you. The best way to get in touch is by email. The address is talkback@soundprint.org. Soundprint is production assistant Nkechi Mogekwu and audio engineer Jared Weisbrot. Our executive producer is Moira Rankin. I'm Lisa Simeone.